help us analyze a little bit of this against the kind of current geopolitical backdrop, Dr. Bob Wekesa, director of the African Center for the Study of the United States at Wits, joins me now. Dr. Wekesa, thank you so much for joining us. A happy Women's Day to you. What do you make of the timing of this particular trip?
Hello.
Good morning, Dr. Wekesa. Hi, you're
good
live
morning,
on air.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think the first point one will make is that this visit by Blinken comes at a time when other major global powers are making it to Africa to try to persuade African countries to, you know, partner with them on matters, economics, politics, trade and investments, and so forth. And therefore, the U.S. is actually trying to make a reset of its relations with Africa. And as you clearly say, the entry of the U.S. into Africa, or the return, if you wish, is predicated on the promotion of democracy as a key tenet, which actually compares with other powers such as Russia and China that are not greatly focused on things such as human rights and democracy that Blinken talks about. So it's an interesting time, and the fact that Blinken chose South Africa to start off just demonstrates how important South Africa is in all this discussion of democracy, not just in South Africa, but across the continent.
It's, you know, it's not lost on me that this comes just about a week or so after foreign minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, kind of crisscrossed African countries. It's unfortunate we were speaking to our Russia expert just last Thursday, but ran out of time to discuss the importance of Russia's charm offensive on the African continent. And to your point, not necessarily over democracy and the like, but on sort of bread and butter issues like food security, and I'm sure some form of financial partnerships and trade. Which of these resonates more with the African leadership as it stands? Democracy and sort of esoteric climate change conversations, or with many who have ties with the other sort of non-NATO side of the world, like China and Russia, the financial issues?
I think there are two ways of looking at this. One is that at the top level, at the government and leadership level, say at the presidential levels, African countries are more interested in matters of economics and trade. They want to see direct financial investment in their economies to build infrastructure, to tackle things such as energy. You know, for a country like South Africa, for instance, the frequent power blackouts are a big concern, so they are focused on bringing in new energy, initiatives and energy sources. Much more than democracy. If you look at the African continent, not many countries are very highly democratic. Many of them are actually dictatorships, for lack of a better word. And that's one level. But at the level of citizenry, or the citizens, or the people, which are the lower levels, if you wish, as Blinken directly mentioned, there are many polling agencies tracking trends and patterns show clearly that citizens are interested greatly in matters to do with freedom, democracy, human rights, accountability, and so forth. And many commentators have pointed out that the countries that are more democratic on the African continent, but elsewhere in the world, usually have higher levels of development than countries that are led by leaders who are corrupt and so forth.
Certainly. Thanks for that. And I tend to agree. So let's talk a little bit about the importance of Biden's Africa policy at this point, which you wrote about in your article on Anthony Blinken's visit. And I suppose their policy expectations.
No, I think now the policy is out, and it's very clear that the U.S. is looking to reengage with Africa. The policy now is quite different from the last major policy, which was issued in 2012. By the Obama administration. For one, even though we know that there's competition between the U.S. and other powers such as China and Russia in Africa, the policy does not directly mention that competition. Instead, it talks about giving Africans a choice to make between democracies, meaning the U.S., and dictatorships, meaning Russia and China. And so that's quite a major reset. But in terms of expectations. Now we have the policy. It clearly focuses again on promotion of democracy, which is a key long-running tenet of the U.S. As a society. It also focuses a little more on investments this time around, much more than in the past. I think Blinken, in his lecture at the University of Pretoria, pointed out very clearly that the U.S. government, working with its agencies such as USAID and Prosper Africa, is going to work with African entrepreneurs, African governments, and African governments, African businesses, to actually invest more, for example, in the information and communication technology sectors. We must understand that in the past, most of the digital investments have actually come from China. And so there is a reset there. And lastly, there are a couple of interesting new additions in the policy, including using cities as avenues for partnership between Africa and the U.S., and also looking at issues such as counterterrorism and so forth. Yeah.
So interesting. I mean, if we're truly speaking about Africa as an equal in this particular relationship, I mean, I think the emphasis is always on what the U.S. expects from us. What do we expect from them, particularly South Africa, out of this relationship? We obviously haven't had an outright alignment when it comes to the Russia-Ukraine war. We both say we're seeking peace, but we have different views on how we'd like to get there. We have very strong ties from a trade perspective with the United States, as you said, cities and in some cases provinces. I think the Western Cape is the U.S. is the largest investor into the Western Cape, for example. What are some of the expectations that we could be putting on the table diplomatically from the United States, particularly on this visit?
I think that's a very important question, and it speaks to the piece that I did for allafrica.com, which is that here we have the U.S. having issued, declared, announced its policy towards Africa, but African governments do not have very clear and coherent policies towards the U.S., and so it's as if Africa is on the receiving end. In this circumstance, the policy then becomes a relationship between the U.S. and Africa, but with only one party having stated what it wants from the other. And so I think the onus is on African governments, African countries specifically, African regional blocs like the SADC and East African Community and ECOWAS, as well as the AU, to actually develop their own clear set of priorities towards the U.S. In the African context, for example, when you talk democracy, it will mean that we use African structures and mechanisms, such as the peer review mechanism, which is led by NEPAD, the New Partnership for African Development. And so I think the big issue here is that we are only with one a policy from the U.S. only, that goes only so far. It doesn't complete the cycle because we don't have an African perspective on these issues.
It's fair enough. At least, at the very least, we should affirm a South African perspective, at least, if not for the whole continent. Dr. Bob Wikisa, thank you very much, Director of the African Center for the Study of the United States at WITS. Very interesting times at this particular point after a full administration we barely paid attention to.